Welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast, the most influential and listened to podcast in auto detailing. Welcome to the community.
Hi, welcome to the Pints and Polishing Podcast. I'm Marshall. That's Nick. You can find us at HyperClean Store or over the HyperClean Specialist group on Facebook. Hey, Nick, spring's in the air, right? Boy, what a beautiful day. As you know, I took a little errand, and it's spring. It's a beautiful time to, at least for a moment, take the doors off, go for a cruise. I had an errand. Pull up next to the stoplight. Guess who? Well, I didn't know if it was Bob Barker or not, but flowing white hair, convertible down in an all-white A5.
Woo! Oh, yeah?
Man, he was looking good. Loving the day. What's going on in Vegas? You got white A5s out there? I thought it was beautiful.
We got them everywhere. Quick question. Was this on company time or do we clock out? What do we do?
So let's get testing products.
Oh yeah. I'm just flying down the road testing some products, seeing if does this tire shine sling or not? So I have a weird thing with convertibles that, first of all, I think very few cars look good as a convertible, but I've always told customers this and we all kind of get a kick out of it. So everybody just understand this is kind of an internal joke for guys that know me, but I'll share it here. I think you got to have a certain level of car to rock the convertible. And I think it's a lot higher bar than what people think. That's my personal opinion. Like, even I don't like, 330i BMW convertibles. It's not high enough for me. I just don't like it.
So now, Sebring's out.
Yeah, Chrysler Sebring's out. Murano's out.
But you've said you thought the TT was a pretty cool car.
They're not all convertible.
No, but you can get a convertible. So you're out on the convertible TT.
You're in
on the regular TT.
Yes. I'm telling you, for like Ferrari F430, that's acceptable. Like, it looks good.
Well, of course it fits
right. Yeah, but that's my only opinion. That's the only convertible. And no. I mean, look, I have family members that have purchased convertibles, sports cars. I look at them and I go, it kind of passed the test, but not really. Okay. So look, I got a very weird thing about convertibles. I personally don't like them that much. Right.
You probably are the guy that wants that big eagle on the front of the hood and to be able to take the little, what are those, the T-tops? You're a T-top guy, aren't you?
Hey, 100%, you're right about this. The one thing that I think's underutilized are T-tops. Because you know as well as I do, go back to like some of those 240Zs with the T-top.
Listen, I know as well as I got a four-door Jeep. Of course I love T-tops. You're the guy that gives me a hard time about it. Now I know why you secretly are a true Jeep guy. You love T-tops, just like we have on the four-doors.
Hey, everybody listening to this podcast, it's about to be a 3-minute and 7-second podcast. I mean, we're close. We're inching to a very short podcast here. No, I just have a weird thing. I think it's like proportionally how they look, how they age. You and I have seen them all age so poorly. It's like a hard thing to get out of my head, right? Like if a Chrysler Sebring aged well, I don't know that I would have that opinion. But so many tops that we grew up with and so many tops that you see age, I'll give you an example. Bentley GTs, with the convertible, they look pretty good, but they don't look better than the normal version, the non-convertible version. And so then it's hard for me to kind of look at it, but those tend to age a little better, a little higher quality fabric. I get it. I understand what everybody's thinking of themselves. I understand what Marty's going to say.
What?
I'm just telling you, I have a real weird thing with convertibles.
But we're going to say what looks better on a convertible. One just crossed my mind. Come on. Ice baby, that 5.0 rack top down so that air can blow. Come on, man. That 5.0 looked much better. That Mustang looks much better in a convertible.
I'm just going to have to disagree with you.
Okay.
I'm just going to have to disagree with the old vet convertibles. No, now the vet with the glass tops, where the tops just came, they just came off right out of the middle and there was, glass right behind you. I think those look a lot better. So technically you can get the convertible feel without the ugly convertible top.
Each their own.
It's okay that you looked at that guy next to you today and you go, you know what? That's me in 20 years. Gray hair flowing in the wind.
I wish I had that much gray white hair flowing. Trust me. That's me and Bob Barker. I always had a thing about Bob.
You're like, you know like what, that. Honey? I'm going to buy me an A5. I've always wanted to own one, but I definitely wanted the white-on-white convertible one. I get it, man. I just have – it's something about the proportions, and I think I've seen so many of them age poorly. I really can't get it out of my head.
Well, Tim Ferriss, you know him, that four-hour work week guy. He said a big thing of what he tried to do was not be – the red BMW convertible guy when he reached a certain age.
Like, hey,
he and a buddy had a pact that they would not be the guy that I just saw next to me. So, talk about things that age well or don't age well. There's another, I got sent pictures as springtime. It's not only for cruising, but it's also for buying, right? Mm-hmm. Many people start to go out and look to buy
tax season.
There could be tax season. That is true in that bracket. But there's also people, you know, in the car market that are like, they start to change their habits and they want to have a different vehicle just because of, and that's probably why, right? The manufacturers do one car and without a convertible and one with it because they know some people are just going to go that way, right? So, but I got sent a picture, and this is the interesting part is when things start to age, you've got a lot of different models that we've talked about plastics, but you know, of course the easy one's Jeep, but the second easy next one is Dodge, right? Not far away. There's a lot of people though complain, as I've read, that have a hard time with BMW plastics and the stuff that they run through them. So, you know, plastics is a thing that we have to start thinking about when we're looking to buy a used vehicle is how are these plastics going to age?
Yeah, I mean, look, the one thing that we all know that are listening to this podcast is plastics can always be re-dyed. You know, you can either use a spray dye or a wipe-on dye, which there are several popular products. I think we kind of saw this, you know, you go back to like the Avalanche. You know, that's when we saw plastic cladding, the Aztec, those types of things where there was so much
Pathfinder cladding. Didn't it have on or the... What's that other Pilot, Nissan that had Honda. that big like roof rack almost looking plastic thing? Murano, wasn't it? That early Murano?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but you had a lot, right? Honda Pilot, Honda Element. Remember those Honda Elements? Yeah. They had those big plastics on the bottom. So it's something manufacturers have done a better job. This is one of those things to say, I mean, plastics used to look bad after 5 minutes, you know, especially when it started to become the way that the bottom of the car was finished out. I think you and I, first of all, we're in testing on a specific trim coating that has different properties than just a normal ceramic that we have in our lineup. But ceramic coating is a great way to protect plastics right out of the gate. In a lot of cases, it can provide a little bit of restoration, but you got to be careful. If your plastics have already started to turn, sometimes ceramic coating can be a detriment.
What do I do? Let's say I'm looking at a lot. I'm looking at this car. Not sure I'm loving the plastics, but I like everything else. Yeah. I'm going to grab the car. Then what am I going to do?
So you have two options. Number one, some of that plastic cladding is very affordable. It just pops off. You use what's called a gasket tool. You just pop it right off and you just buy the new plastic right from the manufacturer, or you can find it in the aftermarket, whoever actually makes it, whatever. That's one option. And that's a good way to get money off of a deal.
That's what I was going to say. Is this enough of a value that we can kind of push back on them, or is this kind of chump change? It's not much.
I would push back. I mean, if I'm replacing things, it'd be like, I always push back on floor mats. You know, you've gotten in used cars and you're like, hey, these floor mats are toast. I know it's going to be $450 for me to get the whole car floor mat, whatever it is for those to get OEM floor mats. Or you're going to have to go WeatherTech or some aftermarket. I always use any of those things to my advantage, right, when buying a used car. It's just like if something was in a light accident, I'd go analyze the car, I'd use it to my advantage. So definitely use it to your advantage. But if you have some that you're like, hey, these are looking pretty tired, but I want to bring them back, then you're in a total re-dye situation, right? Don't kid yourself. Don't try to say, well, this looks like it could be fixed with ceramic coating. There's a limit to all of that, right? No matter what anybody tells you, there's a limit to it because a dye is an actual dye. and it's feeding dye back into the system. And that's what you're trying to replace. A ceramic coating, even if it has some rejuvenation properties to it, which is what we're trying to come up with, one of the things people have to realize, you got to know when to draw a line. So if I'm already thinking, hey, these need to be replaced, it's worth going and getting some spray-on dye, which you know those products work very well. You got to mask off your paint, mask off some areas. So maybe you need a little bit more knowledge. But there's some you can put on right on an applicator pad. And hell, you can put 2-3 coats of it on. Do one day, let it dry, come back the next day or a couple hours, whatever. They're pretty effective. And then you go over that with ceramic coating after it's cured up. It works really well.
Do I have a risk like per manufacturer or, hey, these are, if you're going to get this type of car, listen, I mean, the easy ones to throw out of the gate, which you and I know, is a Wrangler or something like that. It's why I bought a Sahara instead of the other models, is because I didn't ever want to mess with long-term maintenance of plastics. But, are there vehicles that if you, for instance, we talked about Audi earlier, or, I mentioned BMW, people say that is good plastics, but if you got the wrong chemical flowing through what they're, pushing stuff through, and I don't mean plastics just exterior, people, you got plastics everywhere. So, are there manufacturers that are known for doing better with plastics and have better care, or is plastics just overall bad?
Well, look, you have some Ferraris, from the 90s, early 2000s, that their plastics were so bad they would fail inside the car, right? So you have situations where we all have to realize manufacturers aren't controlling a lot of the process, right? This is one of the biggest misconceptions of, well, Ford builds cars. No, Ford puts cars together. It's very different than manufacturing an entire car. Nobody manufactures an entire car. They're getting something from somewhere, right? You go to some German cars, they're going to be getting a lot of parts from Bosch. You're going to go to this Japanese manufacturer, they're going to be getting a lot of stuff from this company. And yeah, they may be in the family. They may have ownership in those companies, but those companies operate completely independently, no matter what anybody thinks. And when you're talking about plastics, you're talking about a select few companies building all these plastics for everybody. And all it takes is they have a bad week. You could buy any car that plastic's going on and there's a problem. You and I are in the plastic bottling business. It just takes one bad run and you have an issue, right? I mean, we're learning this, for all of you that buy our products in our 16 ounce and our gallon, that's not within our control. Those are American made by a reputable company. They have a bad month, they have a bad month, right? Like, it's the same on your car.
And apparently molds can go bad, right? That's something we learned.
And by the way, they can say to themselves, we're not going to fix it yet, it's too expensive. So you guys are stuck. And the same can happen to a car manufacturer. So plastics are one of those things. Look, obviously, if you can avoid cars, like you said with your Jeep, if I get a Sahara, I don't have as many plastics. That is always the step to take. Some cars that you want, they just tend to have more plastic on them. The FJ Cruiser from Toyota had a ton of plastic on it. It's actually held up pretty well, not horribly. But at any moment in time, those things start to go bad. You just got to deal with it.
Yeah, I forgot the XJ does have, right?
No, the FJ. Yeah, the FJ,
I mean, Cruiser. Yeah, not XJ. Yeah. Not the Jaguar. Jaguar convertible? In, out?
Yeah, well, here's the funny thing. I do have what's one of the first cars I ever drove when I was detailing cars for a wholesaler. I have a real soft spot for that car, but by my rules, that aged really horribly with that top. That top probably had to be replaced 10 times in 10 years, but I'm with you. Looks pretty good.
So is that the one that got away? Was it Lark posted in our group? The one that got away from him that he sold. There's a lot of us have that vehicle that we just wish we would have kept on to. We wish we had a little bit more. My brother-in-law, his brother had a Mustang that was, and he's like, why did we sell this? I wish we wouldn't have. And it's cool the way cars kind of do that to us.
Yeah, here's the funny thing. I don't really have that connection. I would say E39 M5 for me, but I made so much money on that car that I'm just like, I'm actually shocked that it even happened. But that's an all-time sedan, right? That's an all-time thing for me that I wanted to own. I think now the funny thing for me is I don't think about what got away. I think about what I wish I would have bought when they were cheaper. Maybe Which I didn't is? Even own them. Well, yeah. I mean, look, you look at some of the Porsches you could have bought for no money, you know, compared to what they are now, the air-cooled Porsches that nobody cared about, you know, those kinds of things. I look at that and go, man, if I'd have just put my money on that, you know, if you had enough money to buy Countach when they weren't, you know, where they're at now, you know, those types of things. I don't think about anything that I sell because I've turned over so many cars, but I do think about cars I wish, like I'll give you an example, the 1990s Toyota Land Cruiser. You know, I wish I would have taken advantage.
4Runner that you could take the top off of.
No, dude, get off the tops.
Can't.
Yeah. No, I just wish there were some things that I knew in the moment, most of these things. Like, I knew 90s Land Cruisers were going to go through the roof because they were such a special car. I didn't realize, you know, there's one that finished on Bring a Trailer this morning that I was watching like the last 5 minutes, and I'm like, I cannot believe I didn't buy one of these things. I always loved them. I always knew they were special in that brand, and I like them. So if I had one, this would all be gravy for me. But now, you know, for the ones you want, you're in $75,000, you know, low mileage, good shape, those kinds of things.
Yeah. So you know, the other fun thing about spring and, you know, spring is there is that old spring cleaning, right? Like, yeah. Always having, and this is, I started seeing it in multiple car clubs that I'm in. There are different groups, people posting pictures of out cleaning their cars and getting them ready. Listen, in our group, people are trading off wheels, or they're posting and saying, hey, we're a little bit like me, 1 week too early. I guess New York got slaughtered with some snow or something. So, but you know, there's a lot of people that will trade off their wheels and, you know, go into their summer wheels. But what is a spring cleaning, right? Like, Can you explain to us what you talk to your customers about? Like, what goes into a spring cleaning? I think of, for me, which we talked about on the YouTube video, is something that you should do quarterly, right? Something you should do seasonally and tie in, you know, if you've got things that you do at your house every season, like changing the air filters at your house, you know, hey, it's time to change some stuff on your car, and you can kind of roll it in together.
Yeah, I think if I lived in an area that got snow and salt and everything, my spring cleaning would be cracks, crevices, and underbody, right? Like, that'd be the thing that I'd be real concentrated on, you know, coming out of winter. All my door jams, all, you know, all those little nooks and crannies, that would be my spring cleaning number one. What we deal with out here going into to springtime is, this is the time we actually do a lot of coatings. This is where we'll do a lot of Uno applications for people yearly. We'll see, you know, we just had a brand new 4Runner in here that was purchased. We'll talk about on Monday or on Tuesday's episode. One of these things that I kind of say to people is, I think it's where you live, right? Like, if I live on the coast in California, you know, where it does get cold because you have the marine layer, you know, whether you're in San Diego or what, I mean, I live there. I'm telling you, it gets cold in the winter. When it gets warmer, that's when you can do that extra level of detail, right? Because you're thinking to yourself, okay, I got some warmer weather. I want to be outside. I said this to my guys this week. All of a sudden, details took a little longer this week. I'm like, hey, dude, are we enjoying the sunshine? What are we doing out
you
there?
You bet.
They're like, yeah, I guess so. I mean, everything was like, these guys couldn't wait in the wintertime to be done as quick as possible. And now all of a sudden it's like 3-4 o'clock. And I'm like, you guys aren't done yet? They're like, nah, man. They're just so happy to be on the phone. So I look at it as, when that weather breaks, it's real dependent on where you live. If you live in a salt area, I think you got to go through the nooks and crannies in a much different way than, let's say, Florida, Southern Georgia, the Southwest. You know, I just think it's different. And I think if I lived in a salt area, man, I'd be heavy on all those hidden areas that can kind of make my car look banged up long term.
And as your point on the rinseless video, not the time to use rinseless. Go ahead and get the power washer out, get the deep cleaning involved, and go after it. I agree. What other things? You know, I mentioned putting on glass, putting that on to protect the windshield. What about fuel treatments? What about other things like that? Is this something that, you recommend as you take care of your customers' cars? Like, is this something that you recommend they go through and do something like that too?
Well, the only thing we deal with in fuel in the fuel world is cars that sit a lot. We make sure the fuel is stable and it's not going rotten or whatever. It needs to be drained or having a fuel stabilizer in it. We don't do fuel treatments, and I have a real belief about gas that you just buy the best gas consistently and you're probably pretty good. Go to a Chevron, go to a Shell, buy the top end gas for your car and call it a day.
Quick Trip says guaranteed gas. That doesn't mean it's that great.
Is that where you go? See, here's the funny thing.
Quick Trip or Come and Go, right? Everybody loves my favorite gas station.
Yeah. Well, it's gone, right? It's going to be renamed.
Not around here.
It's going to be called Maverick. So it's funny. I have always been particular about gas. No one else in my family is that way. You know, I don't know why I got it in my head, or I was just buying cars that I could barely afford and I didn't want to screw them up. When I started buying cars I could barely afford and I was driving things, and you know, the early things with BMWs when I was buying them was like, you only put Shell gasoline in BMWs because that's the best gas. And that was probably forum driven. You know, I was probably influenced a lot by people that didn't know a whole lot, but I've largely dodged a lot of fuel additive stuff by just trying to buy the best gas I could.
Did they also like full serve back then too? Is that,
Hey, I'm not that old. Let's all relax. We do have full service gas stations randomly throughout Vegas. So
When we went to Brazil, that's what was crazy. It was like, whoa, like blast from the past. Like it was full service, like windshield washing and everything.
Isn't that still a thing like in New Jersey? Don't they still have like the, I think it's like a union gig or something. We'll have to have somebody from New Jersey chime in, but I think they still have full service gas.
Well, interesting. So have you had customers, and I know we always talk about Porsche guys kind of a little bit different, right? Like Porsche guy, there's a reason they're a Porsche guy. And, you know, they have, which is what makes them unique, is this very special tuned, whether it's eye for what they like in a vehicle or ear in the way it sounds. There's a lot of people, as you know, Porsche started pumping out through a microphone underneath a car. You know, if we all know what we're talking about there, the sound of exhaust versus, you know, the true exhaust that happens in other Porsches. I read where a guy that, you know, he's got a Cayman, took it in for service, but he wasn't happy with, you know, the 718 Cayman, the base one that he got as a loaner. Said he thought it sounded like a very large lawnmower, like, and was just not happy, right? So we can all understand Porsche guy, and at the same time, we can appreciate Porsche guy. So he basically even said that, you know, when he took the car back in, he wanted to let them know that he was done with it, right? Like, have you ever heard to the extent of, okay, what is it about exhaust that makes people, is it the auditone and the auditory is that much more
I'll tell you the number one place Porsche guy gets his world rocked is from GT3 to GT2. One sounds like a flat out race car, which is the GT2, and GT3, which has a great sound, is much more something people can live with, right? I think here's the craziest thing about exhaust. You can pick the nicest exhaust in the world for whatever car, a Lambo, a Ferrari, a Mustang, whatever. Everyone experiences it differently. I mean, everybody. Me and you stand next to each other. I go, man, that car sounds great. And you're like, ah, man, I don't like that. Exhaust is a real individual thing. There are people that love certain exhaust sounds. There are people that don't. You know, we got a guy on our street that spent a lot of time messing with this Mustang that he owns. Funny enough, the 16-year-old just bought a Mustang same year, and he's driving around. This guy hasn't really been to drive his car a lot because his work is so bad on his car, which tells you about the home mechanic sometimes. Nice guy. The car sounds horrible to me. I'm just like, he's like, oh, man, this is what I always wanted, and, you know, I love how this sounds. I'm thinking to myself, I just wouldn't drive it. It just doesn't sound right to me. But I mean, it's so individual. You know, when you talk about exhaust, there are things, you know, look at the Japanese import crowd and the things they like to hear out of their exhaust compared to probably what you and I like. And even between you and I, it'll be completely different. Like, I hear the LFA from Lexus. I think it's the best sounding car ever built, probably, or at least in the conversation. There are other people that will argue to the death they don't like how it sounds. It just is what it is. And so you got to be very careful. You know, if you don't have the money where you can buy three or four exhaust systems, a lot of guys buy an exhaust and they convince themselves they like it when they absolutely hate it.
Yeah. Is there a way you'd think that somebody would eventually come out with some app or some way for somebody to hear what it might sound like, right?
There are ways, but I'm telling you, it's nothing like when you, the one thing that I think a lot of people really do hate is the drone on the interior, right? So they may like how the car sounds on the outside, but if they get in the car and it sounds a certain way and it has like a low drone sound constantly, very few people in the high-end market enjoy that. They might convince themselves they like it, but matter, I've watched it with my customers. That car suddenly gets driven less. Then they get a new car. Now that car's not getting driven at all. And then when they finally admit it 3 years later, they're like, man, I hated that drone sound when I was driving that car around. And again, that's kind of what makes GT3 special. That's kind of what makes Ferrari special. Because when you sit on the interior of most of their cars, it's still enjoyable. So they've kind of figured out the sound deadening. How do I make this sound right? And all that kind of stuff.
Okay, so Mercedes guys is a little more chill than Porsche guy, right?
Yeah.
So, because remember, Mercedes guy, customer here, he wanted to show us the different sounds, the way if you could put it from this mode to this mode, and he wasn't complaining. He was just wanting to show you how to make it sound different. Like, but they actually just enjoy the different tunes than trying to specialize into an exact tone.
And look, he was in a Mercedes that was specifically built to hear those tones, right? You drive an S550, you're not trying to hear much of anything. You know, you're not that guy. You know, that's not what that car is for. You may be that guy on your other car, but when I buy an S550, I want it to be pretty quiet and I want to enjoy my ride and I want the luxury. The car that that you and I saw from your customer, totally different experience. Right? He wants to hear it. He wants to have some speed. He wants to, you know, go from sport mode to normal mode to an aggressive mode to that mode. And that's really cool. But I'm telling you, I've done so many cars for customers, tried to talk them out of things. They order it anyway, or they order an aftermarket exhaust. They get it on there and are like, dude, this is miserable. I don't like this. It is so individual, man. You can't even put it into words.
All right. So what's the number one car that you do that you spec out for customers? Is there a specific brand or manufacturer that probably
for me historically has been Ferrari. In most of my, if I take the Bronco, got really big for a little while. Right. But it's not going to be big for me anymore. Most of my customers are now admitting like, hey, that goes to the beach house. That goes to this house. Like, you know, I'm not driving it around Vegas much, but I've probably done the most of Ferrari. I've done a lot of Porsches in the last 5 years as Porsche became bigger. But I find that if you start to talk to people the proper way, a lot of things, you got to keep it basic, okay? Because you think all of these things, like I'll give you an example. There are some of these carbon fiber interior and exterior packages that cost a shitload of money, and everybody's like, that's going to be awesome. Then they get their car because they don't listen to anybody, and they're like, hey, this is kind of a lot. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty ugly, huh? Or they put like a carbon fiber insert in the seat and now where you sit is not so comfortable anymore. And I'm like, I was trying to tell you, they kind of stick this shit everywhere and this isn't going to play the way you think. And so a lot of people do regret going overboard. So you got to find a happy medium. I got some customers, man, they're going to get the top flight spec, like the SF90 we shared in the group. That guy's going, I mean, top price is $950,000. He's going $950,000. I mean, that's his level. That's what he's going to do. Funny thing enough, he doesn't like the car, which I knew he wouldn't, right? He doesn't like the car. And I said, this isn't your type of car. So we tried to get the one Ferrari we took to the dealership, funny story, we're trying to get it back. The one he got rid of, he's like, hey, call them and see if they still have mine. And I'm like, I don't know if they do. Luckily, we might find some luck here and they still have it. But yeah, probably Ferrari for me. But I always tell people, whatever they're selling you the most of that costs the most, don't think you're going to love it because there's a good chance you might not.
So, you know, I was seeing this poll the other day that I thought was interesting. I'm curious what you think, right? There was this poll around if you buy a Porsche, then what should you do? A, should you do whatever you want, not care about anybody? Should you stay OEM and not do a thing? Should you do a little bit? Or should you go big with the wing, do the full-on blown out the way you see on, like, what, Tokyo Drift or something, you know, right? Yeah. Like, so, Fast and the Furious, you know.
I say this all the time. You should always do what you want because you're paying for it.
But what do you think the poll said?
Well, do a little bit.
Yeah. That'd subtle modifications guess. Are okay.
Yeah.
The number one answer. Yeah. That is true.
Yeah. I mean, you get into some of the GT3 specs and guys are like, you know, what color are my door pulls going to be? And what color is the stitching? And what? It's like, we're so far away from what made Porsche cool. Whatever you want, dude. I mean, I've let people get whatever door pull they want. They're looking at me. They're like, you think it's going to look good? I'm like, yeah, why not? You want to screw up your car? Like, I'm not talking you out of it.
So when we're talking spring cleaning, we got to get back to that. We kind of chased a little rabbit, but that's a fun rabbit to chase. But when we're talking spring cleaning, you know, there's a guy that commented on when we're talking about Rentless. And, you know, if you don't live in that salty area and you live in a decent place, you know, a good deep Rentless wash is great. Well, there's a question around process, right? We're process, product, purpose. So when it comes to process, this guy's going, hey, listen, go with the sponge. It's proven. It's guaranteed. You're doing a rinseless wash. And he even lists some, you know, hey, this one's great. This one's great. Says, hey, this is the way. So if we're thinking rinseless wash, is it about the sponge versus a towel? Or is it about how many buckets you have? Because would it really even matter if we were using a sponge or a towel if we only had one bucket? Because then you would never reuse whichever device you wanted. Or you're going to still go, listen, absolutely towel all the way.
I can see the argument if you said, hey, we're going to have 20 sponges.
Exactly. They would have have 20 sponges.
Okay. I don't hate that idea as much as what I see and what I've seen for a lot of years. I choose a towel because a towel has fibers and things can get picked up a lot easier. They can get picked up a lot safer. That's why I choose a towel. The most important thing, I think, when you're rinseless washing is not reintroducing the same wash media into a bucket and just assuming I'm getting everything off that towel or that sponge or whatever. I would just rather eliminate that risk. And that's where I think a lot of people have really latched on to what we're saying. But the arguments we've had the other way is because they're not really looking at what we're saying. We're doing this for the ultimate safety, right? We're doing this so whenever I pick up dirt on a panel, that dirt is not reintroduced to anything that may touch another panel. So it's very basic to me. If I take whatever I'm washing a car with and I put it into a bucket, I'm going to pick up some semblance of dirt or not release all the dirt or whatever, and now I'm going to a new panel. So just like people say about the car wash, you don't know what went through those brushes before, and there are things stuck in those brushes. So things are stuck in the brushes at the car wash, but they're not stuck in your wash mitt, wash pad, sponge, towel, whatever.
Listen, how am I supposed to believe it? I saw the other day a photo of a guy complaining inside of a detailer group about, oh, I hate GM paint, and he showed all these. It literally could have looked like the same meme that people say when they're like, oh, this guy at the car wash is doing this, and I see this, but you see that. Like, this looked exactly like this, and he was a detailer inside of a pro detailer forum saying, oh, I hate GM paint. Like, wait, what? And he was a tradition. He wasn't even a rinseless guy. He was a traditional guy, foam it on and scrub it in. But then he had all these marks all over the paint.
Yeah, man. I mean, none of us like GM black. None of us like Tesla black. None of us like that soft Honda black. I mean, does anybody love it? So if I have the same process on a hard clear coat that's high-end, a high-end process, when I take it to a black GM paint, I'm largely going to have very little issue. I'm not saying I'm not going to get a love mark here and there. I mean, shit happens, right? You wash your truck enough, wash your car enough, things are going to happen, right? You're going to not put enough drying aid down. You're not going to do enough this. You're not going to, whatever. But that's why you got to like really think through what you're trying to accomplish and for what reason. And really think through that process. The number one thing I want to avoid is reintroducing dirt to another spot on the car that I just removed from this spot on the car. Why would I want to do that? Because that's our argument of what every car wash is doing. They're taking dirt from someplace else and they're reintroducing it to a new place. Exactly. I mean, am I wrong? That's the whole argument. So if that's the argument, then me using a two bucket wash method, I'm taking something dirty, rinsing it in something that's dirty after one pass on the car, and I got 100 passes to do, I'm putting it in something dirty, and I'm telling you that it's not dirty. Now, I'm not saying some of the things don't float to the bottom. That's never come out of my mouth or your mouth. I'm not saying all the dirt's going to be floating around, but dirt particles are going to be floating around, and I got to hope that all the dirt is being released from all those fibers of whatever wash media I'm using. So if we can avoid that, then that is the best alternative that I have found. That doesn't mean 5 years from now I'm not going to learn a new way and go, hey, Marty, we got a better way. I'm just saying today I don't want to reintroduce things on different parts of the car after I've already removed them from this part of the car.
And I find it ironic that I just kind of want to come back to like this pro guy that should know, shouldn't he? I mean, how many times have we talked about it? How many times do other people in the industry talk about, let's go back to the first part of the conversation around plastics to now we got paint involved. Like there is always manufacturers that are known for things that they don't do well at.
100%.
I mean, I get it, Dodge truck guy, you don't like the way we give you shit, but Dodge truck is just known for certain things, right? Like every vehicle manufacturer is known for doing things great and known for doing things bad. GM is known for always having, and especially that GM black, bad, soft paint. So to see this guy doing it, I just go, like, is there ever a point in time where it becomes on us to start almost?
It doesn't matter if you're a pro. If you're a car owner, if you're a GM black owner, and you want to get a better result, you're going to have to do a better process in your driveway. There's just no way around it, right? Like this is not just about professional. If you want to get a better result, you're going to have to think through your process and you're going to have to learn by making some mistakes. I've made a shit ton of mistakes in my career. You've made a bunch of mistakes on cars. I mean, we're human. And that's how you get to the point we've gotten when I just go, hey, man, I get we all want to have a discussion. I'm cool with people's opinion. I want everybody to have their own opinion. But make it make sense to keep putting something that's dirty back on the car because you hope your rinse bucket and this magical polymer and this magical this and this magical that made everything float to the bottom. That's just not the case. And even when people do the tests and they go, look at all this stuff that floated to the bottom and the water's black, what do you think is in the black water?
Which there's a specific picture that people posted about how amazing this was. And you go, wait, you can see the dirt floating in the water.
The water's black. Again, like everybody can do what they want, by the way. You want to do it your way, I'm all for that. You know a lot of the happiest people in the car world, you know what they do? They scratch the hell out of their car. They're out in their driveway. They're having a great time. They don't care what you and I or anybody thinks.
Listen, they're gonna wash guy with his chamois a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, he's living his life, man. So I'm all for it. Do what you want. But for those that want to do it a little bit elevated and start thinking through their process and say, hey, you know, I've been washing my GM truck and it's not looking so good. I need some help here. You got to update your process and you got to start thinking through what I feel is common sense, right? Not just what somebody's saying. Nobody has to take my word for how to do it. But if you do it my way, you're not going to reintroduce dirt anywhere. That much is certain. We proved it on the video. Like, the dirt from this front door panel is not going to be reintroduced on the back door panel by any stretch of the imagination ever in my process. And that's okay. That's my process. But you can't argue with what I'm saying. There is no argument. I'm not reintroducing the dirt to another place. I'm not reintroducing it to a bucket. I'm not reintroducing it to the car in any way. That's the purpose of my process. And so the fact that people argue about this, I love that people are thinking about process, but you don't just dismiss what the biggest point of my and your conversation was, which is it's all about taking dirt from this door panel, cleaning it off this door panel, and it never be reintroduced anywhere else on the car, not in a bucket that I could pick it up, not in any way, shape, or form. And that's the point of how we do things. Again, if you want to argue and say that's not correct, that's fine. But what we said and what we say is correct. We're not reintroducing that dirt anywhere else.
So if we think about purpose, right? So that's process. And we think about purpose. I want to throw this question out there. Do we wonder, I just want to, right? Like, there has been this theory that, hey, we can, you know, get the government to recognize and do something, right? Like, I get it. Do we ever take a moment and go, stop thinking that direction towards the government and start thinking a revolution in car care towards the manufacturer? Like, do you think there could ever be enough of a pushback? The same as, listen, I'm not going to say we're going to do a union and do the pushback the way they did, but do you think there could ever be a unity in car care that we begin to zero in on certain manufacturers and go, listen, guys, you continually do this over and over and over, and us in car care really want you to do a change to this?
If things get loud enough, yes, but it's not going to come from guys like us. It's going to come from customers stopping buying that car. That's where the power is, right? If people magically stop buying GM black cars and trucks, and they knew that it was because of their paint, similar to, you and I remember when Toyotas, the bodies on their trucks used to rust all the way through. You know, you'd pull up next to a Toyota truck and you could see the other car in the other lane directly through the bed.
Well, Toyota love. Those were great.
Yeah, they weren't selling them at a high level, and so they fixed the problem, right? Because people were just like, I'm not going to buy that because it's going to rust out. And so I wish we all could band together and say, hey, GM, get your act together, or Toyota, make a stronger paint system. But, you know, we're just not big enough. The industry's not big enough. The only people that are big enough is if everybody just stopped buying Toyotas, or, you know, stop buying GM black, or stop buying Teslas.
Yeah, but could we ever be that voice that starts that revolution?
Yeah, I think we could bring awareness to it, but I think you also have to be very upfront that, you know, 5% of people, 10% of people care about their car on the level that we do. The other 90%, man, they're just driving that thing till the wheels fall off. The kids got peanut butter sandwiches in the seats. I mean, that's just the reality of cars. And it still shocks me, because especially I think the last 3 to 4 years, now I want to be fair about something. Behavior is changing. And behavior's changing not because of what the detailing industry has done, but because cars are so damn expensive. And so now people are stuck in their car and they're going, well, my kid's PB&J has been in that seat for like 6 months. I got to keep this car another 4 years just to get out of the negative equity. I better start looking after my car. And you don't have to take my word for it. We've shared this on the podcast before. We're hearing from big retailers about the massive growth in what they call the auto appearance section of parts stores, et cetera. I do think we could have a revolution that's great for detailing, which is why we push so many people to talk about distribution and guys to become experts in their area, because I think a lot of people need to think about this. we are going to see people going back to having their cars better cared for, right? That guy that's out there on the weekend, maybe that doesn't come back and that guy goes to a professional, but you're going to have a lot of people. I mean, I shared that the thing on the Chevy Tahoe where somebody paid, maybe I didn't do it on here, correct me if I'm wrong, paid $83,000 for their Tahoe, paid on it for 3 years, still owes $73,000 on that Tahoe that's now worth about, you know, 38 to 40. So they paid $50,000 in payments and they've only paid off $10,000. That's how high their interest rate is on a brand new Tahoe during the pandemic. And so I want people to think that will change some behaviors. I think that family may look at that car and go, we can't destroy this thing because we can't get rid of it. Yeah. That could change.
And I think you're right. I actually, you said that you think that that's Saturday morning guy is going to go to the, I think that they will for coding, but even, you know, my Porsche guy that comes into me for coding, then buys HyperClean from us. He enjoys, and I mentioned the surgeons. I mentioned different people I've met around Tulsa. They go, and I just like getting out on a Sunday morning, a Saturday. And I've said to you, and I'm excited for when you get to too, right? You're talking about things you want to do in your garage and stuff you want to do at your house. Like I really do look forward to Sunday or Saturday morning, depending now on soccer games, right? Like when I can go out and spend an hour and a half, put the headphones in and clean my car, like take care of my vehicle that I know I do have a lot of money invested and I don't want to have to go get another one. I want this one to continue to look good. So I love these talks when we get to go in and dive into what it means to be in car care, what it means to take care of a vehicle and whether that's one vehicle or the other, depending on a manufacturer and what that looks like. Hey, at the end of the day, it's us enjoying what we have. We can be the Bob Barker next to us and happy as can be.
He was living it, dude.
Living it. We can be what we want in our vehicle, enjoy it to the utmost. So, great conversation.
All right, brother. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya.